It is now time for Brewocracy Now on KPTZ, our weekly chat with City Manager John Morrow. And as we speak, I am watching Mr. Morrow plugging in a coffee pot. I think he's ready now. Hi, John.
Hey, Tim, how are you?
Good. I hope the coffee brews well for you. And
thank you. Yeah. I feel like I've been trying to keep true to the topic and to the title of the show here. And because of a late meeting, I had to run and get the coffee pot and plug it in under my desk and make my coffee as we speak. So pardon the
it's the okay. Those are all important things. as I said, this is Brewocracy Now, and I have a collection of questions that were emailed to me. And that is always an option for everybody out there. Tim at kptz.org, or you can join us on Zoom, and that link is on the KPTZ website. If you scroll down to Brewocracy Now, you will see that link, and you can join us at any time. So I have my coffee in hand, and I have so many questions. I'm going to get right to it. I'm going to start in order of the questions as they were received, because I received some actually during the latter part of last week's show with Larry Stein, and wasn't able to get them to you quite in time. So I'll start off with those. Okay. This one is from a gentleman who asked that his name not be used, and he says, could you ask our city manager? Okay, I wanted to dislike you so much. The city council... good start, John. You ready for this?
I like the start, actually.
Yeah, I can... I'm fond of it myself. The city council has made so many financial and bad decisions in the past. So here we go again with the golf course. 60-plus acres of land, a cash cow... City revenue down, what a way out, new tax, lot revenue, etc. But I like what I heard on the last radio call. You made sense. And it also sounded like you were on the citizen side. So yes, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. It probably helped since I heard you were originally from Maine, Bangor here. Okay, so... question number one, as you pour that coffee, this is great. I love this. Could you address the opening of the building at the fairground for the homeless, also the new influx of homeless from Seattle?
Wow. Okay. Shall I start with the golf course, Tim?
Well, there are a number of questions from this particular gentleman, and the golf course looms large, trust
okay.
me.
Okay. Well, so look, I think this is a good reason to get a French press someday, because I will say for my first time in my life, this is the first time I'm on radio and Zoom and literally pouring a cup of coffee in my office right now. So I feel like we have achieved something here. And I really appreciate the tone of that of that email. I think I called for last week with Larry, just a kind of a quick reminder to everybody that, you know, here we are in a community, of course we can disagree. That's just how it is. But the way we choose to do that is really important on whether we're going to create division or we're going to try to figure out and understand each other better. So I think top marks to the way that email is phrased. And I kind of like the coy, you know, I really wanted to dislike you. And look, you've got plenty of time to have that play out because you don't know what we've got in store here. But look, I think maybe it's more of a reflection on your comment about the golf course is, you know, this is a big unknown. And when I need to pull back to the basics here, it's not whether or not I have a vision for what needs to be done outside the scope of a community conversation and a commitment to a process that people feel like they're heard. And if the outcome lines up with most people, then great, I guess we've gone okay. But to me, I think, and this is why we've tried to start doing this through Engage PT, is we need a better conversation, a better way of ensuring people feel like they're heard. It sounds like you feel like I've, and I'm not necessarily from Bangor, Maine, but, you know, close enough, you know, it sounds like we're on the right path of at least entertaining the conversation about what we should do. And yes, you're exactly right, dear email commenter. We're in a challenging financial situation right now as a city. And, you know, big surprise, this predates COVID-19. You know, this is something that we've been challenged with as a city before. And I have a lot of empathy for those who actually ultimately make the decisions. You know, the 7 city council members have to make a financial decision for the city, have to pass the budget that I propose with whatever changes. And, you know, that doesn't always go the way people want it to go. We're committed to financial sustainability. You know, we have to be. And yep, golf course and a whole host of other issues are part of that conversation as we move forward. To quickly shift to the fairgrounds, you know, this has been a conversation that we've been working on with the county. And Tim, for your benefit, last week, Larry and I talked a little bit about this because ultimately the fairgrounds is under the jurisdiction of the county and the county fair board. To say that we don't have a role there, though, is probably shirking responsibility. You know, we play a role of partnership with the county and the fair board and with the community on a proper solution. And so, you know, we've heard all sides of this one. We've heard, you know, that we got to stop passing the buck and actually figure out what to do with a dire homeless situation, especially before the winter comes, because the warming shelter can't open. It's too small to socially distance. You know, the Legion is too small to accommodate all the need. So what are we going to do? On the other hand, I hear valid concerns from community members about the impacts to local community. And recently I've heard that around the fairgrounds. So, you know, this isn't an either or, and this isn't a right answer kind of conversation. This is a community that needs to come together. And of course, I put my hand up with some responsibility to help facilitate this. What are we going to do? And how are you going to serve that need? And I think the comment is actually a good one because clearly boundaries don't hold for this problem. It's a problem around the state. It's a problem around our country. And the homeless population isn't stagnant. It changes, it grows. And so I don't know of a jurisdictional conversation about this with, say, Seattle. But I am aware that the way we choose to deal with the issue can have impacts on attracting or sending a message. And so that's something that we do consider. Outside of that, though, I've just been kind of ranting and watching my coffee pile up here. Tim, maybe I'll take a pause.
Oh, take a pause, drink coffee. That's what it's all about. But, you know, to his point, and this kind of intrigues me, this last sentence, also the new influx of homeless from Seattle. Now, has that been quantified? Do we know, is there an influx from Seattle?
I think for me to say that there's no such thing would probably be, you know, probably untrue, but I have no quantification. I guess what I would go to is the, Affordable Housing and Homelessness, Housing Joint Oversight Board, and the task force, and the most meaningful quantification that I could, speak to is their report on housing and homelessness that they did. And I'm not going to be able to specifically call in the numbers, but they've done, you know, a homelessness count, and you know, that report itself is actually a really good starting point for those who want to understand the scale of the problem in our community. I'm going to recall with some general accuracy here, something like over the next couple decades, a need for at least, I think it's close to 1,300 units to deal with our housing issue. So those are the kinds of numbers and the kind of assessment you could see in that report.
Okay. This next question from the same gentleman, I think answers or it encapsulates at least many of the questions that I've gotten from other folks. So maybe we can kill a number of birds with this question and get some folks their questions answered. I have read the RFP for management of the golf course. It seems calculated to guarantee that no viable vendor will appear, in my opinion. I know there's room for negotiating, but oh my. And, you know, the second part I'll add, just as from what I've gathered from other listeners, there is some perception out there that this is on purpose, that the RFP was calculated to not achieve the result that these folks desire. Do you have anything to say about that?
Oh, of course I do. You know, I don't want to waste anybody's time, especially my team's time. But, you know, members of the community, there's nothing more frustrating than having a process that looks like a fait accompli. And so, you know, we didn't put the time into, and I could speak for Alex Wisniewski, who's our Parks, Recreation, and, Community Facilities Director, who would say, you know, he didn't labor over crafting that RFP just to have it kind of go down the drain. You know, we've been watching with interest the response to that. I do recognize the timeline, you know, that some have criticized as being too short. I would encourage anybody listening who has ideas or wants to submit a proposal. I mean, we're accepting those proposals for this month, till the end of this month, and we did so last month as well. And there are a few that have trickled through. So, you know, we're looking at these seriously, and, you know, by no means is this just an exercise and, okay, we didn't get anything, let's move on with an alternative use conversation. I really do think they can, in an ideal situation, we would have viable RFPs to choose from and some viable alternatives. And somehow those conversations would come together and start to galvanize around, a community preference there. So it's my hope that, I mean, this is why we also sent it out with the National Golf Foundation. I mean, they've agreed to put this out to golf course operators across the country, and they've done that for us. And we wouldn't have taken that step. I mean, we haven't tooted the horn on that one very much, but we wouldn't have done that step if actually we didn't want anything to come back to us. So it's a legitimate process. You could find fault with it, as I'm sure people have, but we're doing it hand over heart with an intention of hopefully getting some robust RFPs or some proposals back.
So in that same vein, if no vendor is found in October, what vision does the city have for the property?
Right now, there is none. Right now, there is no default what we're going to do. I've seen plenty of people's letters to the editor and, you know, concerns on Facebook and whatnot. There isn't a kind of a behind the curtain sell off of the land in mind. I know that people have been both supportive and very anti about what to do in terms of housing in that space. No, there isn't. There isn't anything up our sleeve. I could just be honest with you. And so if it plays out that there isn't a viable RFP, so if the opposite of what I just said plays out, we don't have a robust RFP a set of proposals. We don't have a great alternative design for it. We're not going to suddenly switch the game and do something drastic. The worst situation that we could see is probably pausing, waiting for a time to come back and restart the conversation. At that time, we might continue with golf in the interim at the course. We might have to make a community decision on whether that's the time for that. But there isn't an alternative in the back of our minds, I could say with certainty.
Okay. Well, and that answers quite a few questions, but we'll get to some more. I think that, you know, this is one of those things. The golf course has elicited more response here than I've seen to date. There are other things to talk about. There's roads to talk about. There's so much going on, but I think that we're at a place right now where it's looming large, and I like for people's voices to be heard. So I will read you quickly a correspondence from Susan Auer, and it's followed by some very specific questions. And she said that the golf course land is identified in the strategic plan as public open space, and that the golf course is identified as one of the wide range of athletic facilities that should be provided by the city. The Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Functional Plan adopted in 2014 identifies the Native Prairie and Hastings Pond as environmentally sensitive areas and states that the land provides multiple open space functions and values, stormwater, passive recreation, etc. The above are just a couple of items within the city planning documents that support the importance of Port Townsend and the golf course and the land it uses. The lease expires in December. The RFP was just released in the middle of August. So her question is, and this is just eliciting maybe a little bit of response, please talk a little about what is in the golf course renewal plan. Please talk a little about what is in the golf course renewal plan referred to in the strategic plan. Why did the city wait so long before putting out an RFP? And I understand the city will not consider stepping in and managing land and golf course itself. Is this correct? If so, when and how was this decision made, and why has the golf course land been excluded from being managed by the city?
Yeah, there's a set of questions in there. I'll do my best to get to most of them, but I guess, you know, I want to respectfully push back on this suddenly being a conversation. You know, it's been a conversation since I started, and granted, I haven't been here very long, but, you know, the renewal of the lease, extension of the lease happened. That was a public decision. And we've been talking about the future of the golf course for at least a couple of the last years, at least since 2018. So, you know, I know that's coming to a head now. It's becoming very real for people, and hence they're sort of, prompted to pay attention. But it's not something that's been in hiding. So I'll reject the notion that we've kind of pushed this along quite quickly. It's actually been part of the PROS plan. We've asked questions as part of that. We've gathered a lot of feedback from the public in that very robust process, where we had over 900 survey respondents, you know, hundreds of people participate in gatherings when we used to be able to do that. So I think it should be known this isn't a sudden decision. The Finance and Budget Committee actually specifically reviewed the National Golf Foundation's report, and they were tasked with doing so and making a recommendation to full council on whether or not the option of the city running the golf course was viable. And for a range of reasons, which I probably won't get into now, it was determined by the Finance and Budget Committee that no, that's not a direction that we want to go. And so they made that recommendation to the full council. It was acknowledged there. And so that was taken off the table, you know, as a city operated golf course. So that's why we're now playing with a fewer set of options. That was one of the options that I believe the National Golf Foundation put in the report as a possibility. And, you know, and frankly, that's what some cities do. Some cities have vendors, some cities operate it themselves. There's kind of a range of different ways to operate a municipal golf course. I forget the other set of questions there, Tim. You might have to remind me.
I think you spoke to this. How will the city proceed if no acceptable management proposal is received?
Yeah. So we'll see soon. Okay. This is a preface here. One of the things that's become clear to me is that I don't have all the answers, and I've known this for 45 or more years, but clearly it's something that listeners now understand, that I don't have all the answers, and nor should I be expected to. I'd like to, over the course of the next few weeks, Tim, have a guest besides those who are joining us here, and really focus on some of those initiatives that we've got lined up for this next year in terms of decision making. And so to go back to Engage PT, we've got 10 things that we need to get through city council decision, including the golf course. And if Alex Wisniewski were here, and maybe in a couple of weeks he could be, we could actually focus this conversation, or at least a portion of it, around the golf course, like we might do around public safety, or like we might do around the mill. And so I'll put that as a proposition you and I can work through over the coming weeks. But I know that my department directors are very willing to do that, and I think it might provide some additional facts and some additional perspective to the matter.
And I think that's a path we'll explore together. And because it does sound intriguing, and this just a question, I guess, just for me. I remember coming to Port Townsend and being struck of the placement of that golf course, essentially in the middle of town, and thinking, wow, you know, you normally see that in like a master planned community. The placement of this is unique, and I understand the value of that to people that golf. I guess that's a preface to my actual question is, what are the statistics as far as usage for the golf course over time? I've heard rumors that golf is struggling in some places. Do we have statistics to show what's happening in Port Townsend?
Yeah, we do, and I guess I want to recognize Sonny, who's on the line here and has some things to say, so we can go quite quickly there. But I will point people, the RFP package, which is on the EngageBT site and on the Parks page on the council website or the city website, does have some of that background built into the RFP. From the National Golf Foundation report, there is a look at national and regional trends as well. So I would encourage anybody who wants to know, and I think that the upshot is we have seen a decline, particularly in this region, in the use of golf, or the patronage here. But I won't get into those details because I can't recite those numbers to you. Could we go to our Zoom guest here?
There you
He's
go.
got
I just
his hand.
have
Yes.
real quick. One, kind of you're talking about having your counterpart, I forget his name, for the county. Because where I live, they're planning a 40 house plus subdivision at the golf course here. I don't know if you're aware. You should be. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I
And
am.
that's that part, you know, I know. And I would figure, you know, and I talked to one planning commissioner who was telling me, I'll leave the name out, that they weren't aware how they got around the public space situation, because it's already a public space technically by law. I don't know all the details because I don't work the city. That's one question, just about how that's going or public hearings. And the second was about your view on term limits for different positions in Port Townsend, mayor on down, council people. That's come up once in a while, and I don't, that's all I have. I mean,
Those are
that's
good ones. Thank you.
so.
So on the county side, I won't weigh in, and actually I think it's probably unwise for me to have any sort of official position on a matter that's actually outside our jurisdiction. And we work very closely with the county, and I speak with my counterpart there almost every day. He's taking a very well-deserved vacation the next few days, but undoubtedly when he returns, this will be back on the list to discuss. And it's something that we have talked about. And I think I don't think I'd be betraying his confidence when I say, the way jurisdictions work together on growth and development is really important to get the outcomes that we collectively need. And if we, whether you love or hate the GMA, the Growth Management Act, I mean, that's sort of one of the foundations for how we've decided to do land use and growth and development in Washington State. And generally, there are some strengths that cities have, and some resources, and there are some strengths that counties have. And I think a more collaborative approach to how to get that right for Jefferson County and Port Townsend is on the way, and because it's a conversation that Philip and I have been having, and I know our elected officials have. So I can't really speak to that specific proposal, but I will say that getting that right and thinking more holistically and actually beyond our agencies, and this is a conversation that includes other jur you know other the port, the PUD, the community, to get it right and to truly look into the future, we need to be more synced up. And I think that commitment has been made. But maybe if there's a future conversation where my counterpart can come on to this show and actually we can talk about that. So it's a great question. On term limits, I mean, look, I don't think it's wise for me to weigh in on too detail much detail on this, but I do realize that it has come up. And I've seen it in the papers and on comments, since I've been here. Without telling you what my personal perspective is, so sorry to pass on the question, I think it should be known that the way we structure, at least the city, and the way that the city manager and the council form of government works here, is that I don't think it's too far for me to say that our elected officials in town are not really compensated that substantially for their commitment to the work. And so a $500 a month stipend to attend, it's not just the council meetings on Mondays. And I know this isn't really your point, Sonny, but
No, it is. No, I just I know it's a you can't hard to answer this. I mean, it's come up. I didn't know how it was being discussed.
Sure. But I mean, I think there's a, that's kind of a pretty low level of compensation for the time required. And there's a lot of prep time. Like I spend time with each of them on the phone, before meetings every month, regular catch-ups. They also have a lot of external responsibilities. So they'll be on a numerous regional boards and commissions. And I'm always stunned by how much time. I mean, I started my day just before 8 o'clock talking to one of my council members before, she was out and doing both her job and a number of commitments for the city. So I guess I want to, you know, irrespective of your views of how well they're doing, they put the time in, and there's not much compensation or reward for that. I think there's a possible problem here where, you know, how many people will be incentivized to jump in and say, I want to stand up for my community and actually represent the community.
Right.
And a good democracy requires there to be a wide interest. And I believe in contested elections and not just sort of one person who's sort of a shoo-in for the seat. And so I think it's definitely on my radar to make sure that people see that the commitment and the benefit to the community and to themselves is on the table so that we could actually have wider interest in representing, because it's a thankless job. Let's just be honest. It's a thankless job.
I do agree that they do a lot of work that people do not know. And that's why I kind of wanted to ask you this. So people here, they're not just sitting there making a meeting once a month. They're working hard. And
They're working hard. And And you know, look, people can disagree with the decisions, but I mean, all the more incentive if you don't want to. And I'd say, I don't think any one of the seven council members would be cross with me if I say, hey, dear community, think about running for election and whatever it is, you know, whatever the seat is, not necessarily city council. There's all sorts of ways to serve, including on boards and commissions, other commissions in the area, and city council. And I think that's what a robust democracy is all about.
Well, thank you. I look forward to you with your counterpart. Thank
Great.
You.
Great. I appreciate the comments. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that does sound like fun, John. We have to put that one together. I do want to give the listeners that submitted questions a bit of time in the next 6 minutes that we have. This one from Patsy Caldwell. My question is, why are we going through this again? And we're talking about the golf course. 2003 was not that long ago. The NGF did a study in 2004 with much more positive results and more reasonable than the one done last year, at great expense, I must add. And I'm sorry I have to truncate this a little bit, but I guess her question is, and frankly, I don't know that acronym. I'm sure you do, NGF.
National Golf Foundation.
There we go. And she says, we need the city to be reasonable in its expectations. Thank you for taking the time today, Mr. Morrow.
Okay. Well, we will be reasonable. And I guess I could confirm, you know, I think part of the problem here is both the lack of good local data. So I'll just say, you know, we don't have as precise a picture, as I would wish, and hence actually contracting out to the National Golf Foundation to look both locally, but also regionally and nationally to kind of build a picture here. I think there's also a caveat here around data. You know, I pulled up the homelessness report while we've been talking because I pitched that one for later. You know, data can help us and it can harm us. It's sort of in the analysis interpretation. I believe in evidence-based decisions and hence the contracting with the National Golf Foundation to do the work to give us a sense. But then there's a really that's augmented by community feedback and opinion and lived experience of those who actually use that piece of city-owned municipal land. I didn't hear a question as much as let's be reasonable in our expectation. And I'd say that right back at the community, hey, you know, we're trying to do the best we can as a city to have a conversation around a very valued piece of public property and make sure that we get the best outcome for everybody. And that's really my aim here is how do we actually get the best outcome? It could be status quo. It could be something different, but we should at least have the confidence to call the question.
And this is slightly more easier for me since I have her question in front of me, but I think to her point, it was, if we did a study in 2003 and the outcome was much more, in her mind, a reasonable, well thought out outcome, that why are we going through it again? I think that's what she was trying to ask.
Gotcha. Well, I would say this, if we could set up a conversation where we can dive specifically into the golf course, and maybe in 2 weeks from now, that might be a good way to funnel some of those questions and have a much more rich conversation with Alex here because he's stewarding that process himself.
Okay. Well, and yeah,
just as a note, that it was 2018, so there was a 2014, but one of the NGF reports that we're using now is from 2018, so it's not uncurrent. It's actually relatively current.
Okay. I have two more I won't have time for, I apologize, but I think that Beth Kelly's, she has a list of questions, which I really doubt we will be able to address in 3 minutes, but I want to at least give you her thoughts.
Great.
She says, when we moved here in the early 80s, Port Townsend was a wonderful town for families. Beside the beaches and parks, there was a bowling alley, a tiny miniature golf course, a roller skating rink, and a 9-hole golf course right in the middle of town. The bowling alley is gone. The roller skating rink is long gone. The golf course is still there, a big green area in the middle of town that is used by families who live here. Unlike the posher 18-hole courses nearby, the greens fees and location are accessible to the people who live in Port Townsend. I understand that once again the lease on the golf course is ending, and once again there's a question about the future of the golf course. Some of the specific questions that she has asked have been addressed. I'll just focus on her last one. Despite this being 2020, not everyone has internet access. Where is information readily available to those who work regular hours and do not have internet access? Thank you very much. Beth Kelly.
Great points. How do we reach more people? We need to do that. And we're calling on you for that. And I'll say again, like I did last week, through Engage PT, we're asking people to step up and facilitate local conversations, bringing in the information, sending the information back to us so that we can, on any number of these issues, including the golf course, incorporate that community feedback into discussion. That could be done on Zoom or whatever platform, because we need to stay safe in the age of COVID. But if you're having those conversations around the kitchen table with your family can do so outside with a small number of people, we want to hear from people and the conversations that they can have. And you can go on our website, cityofpt.us/engage, and you can see that toolkit. And that's another way that's not necessarily just internet-based that you can interact with us. And we could send you one of those packets if need be, instead of downloading it from the internet.
Okay, you heard it here first. I'm going to end, given the shortness of time, with a very small piece of a long set of questions that hopefully we can get to in the future. And this from Kimber Rochford, Dr. Rochford. I'll read his first paragraph because I think that it speaks to what I perceive as being on everybody's mind that wrote today, or not everybody, but the vast majority. Okay. Dear City Council, the golf course lease looks like it could be a hot and divisive issue. I'm clearly biased since I've been it from and enjoy the golf course as it is. Also, like most everyone, I don't like undue change, especially without assurance that it's all for the best. How do you make him feel good about this? Mr. John Morrow, City Manager, Port Townsend.
I just love the self-reflection in that comment, that we all come in with our perspectives and, how do we do this together? So I guess, I chalk one up for the home team trying to bring us together through a difficult conversation, recognizing it's difficult. There are different opinions in the mix. And then ultimately some of these tough decisions, if we do it right, can bring us together with a better understanding, maybe a better reflection on what other people's needs are, and less division. And I think if there's ever a time to call for that, it is right now. So I really appreciate that reflection from that, from the doctor.
And right now we're out of time. Thank you so much, John Morrow, Port Townsend City Manager. We are here every week at the same time, and I'm going to get back to our regular programming here on KPTZ. Thank you, John. And thank you to everybody that submitted questions.
Thank you, Tim. Good to see you.
All worth it.